There's only one undefeated team in the AFC North, and it ain't the Ravens. It's the Steelers. Or the Ravens we'll see later in the season. Here to talk about week one. Look ahead of the Raiders coming up week two. From USA Today, it's the Ravens Wire. Joins us every Tuesday on The Fan. Kevin Allstriker. Kevin, good morning. How you feeling today?
Good morning, guys. Yeah, it was a tough heartbreaker to the Chiefs in week one. You move ahead to week two to the Raiders. Hopefully you can even the record and get back on track.
Now, John Harbaugh said immediately after the game that he thought the offensive line was acceptable, kind of took a shot at the so-called pundits for saying that could still be an area of concern. Didn't really double down yesterday, but still praise them. Kevin Allstriker, your assessment of how the offensive line played against the Kansas City Chiefs with Max Crosby and Raiders coming up, your comfort level in them is what right now?
It's still a concern point for me. I mean, the stars played like stars. I think that that's important. Linderbaum looked good, and Ronnie Stanley looked healthy. I think that's a big part. But, I mean, there were some learning curves, growing pains, whatever you want to say, for the younger players. And that was expected. I mean, it's not something that I went into the game thinking, okay, well, the offensive line is just going to be, you know, this perfect unit with all this chemistry that is going to be able to block guys like Chris Jones and George Karlaftis. We talked about it leading up to the game. It's where Linderbaum misses most of training camp. You're kind of rotating guys in and out throughout the preseason in camp as well. There was always going to be some level of inconsistency, especially with guys. I mean, Daniel Falele gets beat badly by Chris Jones on a couple plays, and Roger Rosengarten's first NFL snap is a strip sack on Lamar that Chris Jones ends up getting. I mean, I expect the unit to get better as time goes on. Personally, I don't, you know, Falele is the interesting one, because I think that to me is, do you put Cleveland in? Do you put Falele in? Is there some level of, okay, do you want Ben Cleveland's possible floor, Daniel Falele's possible ceiling? There are a bunch of other questions there, but, you know, to me it was, especially in the run game, I think run blocking wise, Derrick Henry, he didn't necessarily have a great game. Part of it was the Ravens didn't really go back to him after the five carries on the first drive. But whenever he did get the ball, it felt like there was a guy on top of him in the offensive backfield almost every play. So I would hope the run blocking gets a little better in week two, and they are able to kind of establish that a little bit more behind their offensive line.
Yeah, the run blocking was not good. And, you know, I mean, I've been watching the All-22 and stuff, and I showed Bob earlier on one of the plays, you know, tight formation, likely gets tossed by the linebacker right into Henry for the tackle and a two-yard gain. They need a lot of work in the run stuff. They're not physical yet. And the problem they've got is you look at the defenses they're playing over the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, and we talked about this, I think it was even last week or a couple weeks ago, where you got Max Crosby, Christian Wilkins coming to town, but then you have Dallas, and then it's guys like Micah Parsons, and then Trey Hendrickson with Cincinnati. So
Buffalo. Leads the league in sacks.
Yeah, man, they have a tough test ahead, and it doesn't even get easier as the year goes on. So they're going to have to learn on the fly. They're going to have to get all their stuff together, because, you know, it's not letting up for them. So to me, that's the big thing, where the Ravens have a lot of work to do, and that's the big concern point for them, because, you know, it all starts up front for an offense.
Now, Kevin, I'm like you. I thought Ronnie played well. I was, you know, pleasantly surprised that, you know, he anchored and he showed his athleticism. Linderbaum missed a few, you know, but that he does against big people. I mean, that's his kind of kryptonite. He just can't handle big people like that. You know, I mean, they're 30 pounds bigger. I think Voorhees will be okay in time. I mean, he had a couple mess ups, but I think fundamentally he'll get through because of his fundamentals. Falele scares me to death, and, you know, he just so inconsistent, and he gets his body out of whack. You know, I mean, his fundamentals are bad because he plays high all the time, and he can't adust on the move.
Yeah, he doesn't have that necessarily guard profile to me. And look,
well, neither does Cleveland, because Cleveland stinks worse, I think.
The issue is they don't.
Why you got to make fun of the city like that? What's Cleveland got to do with it?
The thing that made the Ravens, I guess, and this even goes beyond the offensive line, but last season, it's they had a bunch of quality and just, I guess, luxury young depth last season. It's even on the offensive line, where, okay, you have Zeitler, well, oh, now you can rotate in a Pashman carry if you want to at any position, or maybe you can go with another guy here. And you had your vets on the line, and then the young guys were the backups. But now, since those vets are gone, now those young guys step up into a role, and they didn't necessarily go out there and add another veteran or anything. They went and drafted Roger Rosengarten, and they plugged in Angel Voorhees, but that's it. So I agree with you, where the left side is not really the concern to me. You know, if Stanley, right. Yep. if he can stay healthy, then I think he'll have a good year. Voorhees, I think, will be able to clean stuff up, and by the end of the season, we'll be talking about how good he is. And Linderbaum, again, I remember Cincinnati, DJ Reader, when he was there, gave Linderbaum fits. Guys like Quinnen Williams gave him fits. So that'll happen at times, but he's still one of the best, if not the best center in the league. But that right side is the key, because for the Ravens, they just, the depth is young, it's inexperienced, and the profiles of those guys, I don't think necessarily fit what they want to do. So I think, look, in time, Rosengarten has a chance to be, you know, this guy that they can rely on. But it's going to take some time, especially in a rotation where, again, I've been on here and I've said that I don't think that's sustainable to be able to go and do what you want to do. So obviously they're running it right now with Pashman Carey and Rosengarten out there. And especially with a rookie, that can be hard because you can't establish a rhythm. You get taken out after every couple of drives and, you know, you either get thrown into the fire or you don't, and the Ravens are kind of doing the both ways thing. So we'll see what happens there.
Hey, Kevin, you know who, after watching the All-22, watching Mark Andrews, I wonder if he was a little hazier, because he blocked like crap. He just kind of looked unaware at times, you know, and on a third down catch, he just goes down and he's 2 yards. That did not look like a Mark Andrews type play. You know, so I don't know if he was still kind of in a little funk or something, but he didn't play well.
Yeah, that third down catch, I mean, I think he looked like he was trying to get back up, but just couldn't do it. You know, he couldn't get up. So the Chiefs were throwing the book at him. They were double covering him and putting guys on him, and that's what the Chiefs kind of do, is take away your best weapon. But I'm curious to see what the usage is in the Raiders game and kind of how he looks, because teams will always try to take away Andrews, but, you know, the Ravens, they said, all right, if you're going to take away Andrews, well, we have another guy named Isaiah Likely, and he can do some damage to you. So that's the luxury of being able to run two tight end sets like that. But for Andrews, I think after the first month of the season, that to me is going to be the big evaluation point for me, to see kind of where he is in this season at least, because I mean, at least they have a quality option and Likely, where if it's not working with Andrews, you can just plug him right in and Likely and kind of go from there. But I know that, you know, with the injuries he's had over the last couple seasons, it can be tough. So maybe it just has to be a little bit of a ramp-up period for him as well.
What was your impressions of Roquan and Kyle Hamilton in that game?
They struggled. Yep. They definitely struggled. I think.
Let me ask you this real quick, because Bob brought it up the next day.
Yeah.
Does Roquan look heavier to you?
A little. I see where you're coming from if you think that, because and again, this could maybe just be, hey, you got to play the weight off. But he definitely did look a little. I don't know if slower is the word, but it was a rough game for him. And even, you know, they put Rashee Rice in a slot against the linebackers, and they just got whatever they wanted. Really, Trenton Simpson was the only one that could stop it. You know, Roquan got cooked. Malik Harrison got cooked in multiple different ways in the open field.
Oh, boy.
But for Roquan and Kyle Hamilton, yeah, not their best performance. You know, they got washed out in the run game. They, you know, got pushed back by offensive, especially on that Rashee Rice touchdown.
Oh,
you know,
that was ugly. That was ugly.
Yeah. Yeah, so hopefully better times ahead for those two. They're talented enough. I think they're going to be just fine, but we can definitely say it was a little bit of a rough performance for them in week one.
Kevin Ostreicher, USA Today, the Ravens Wire home opener coming up Sunday at 1 o'clock, M&T Bank Stadium. Ravens 9.5-point favorites over the Las Vegas Raiders. Kevin, what's happening on the Ravens Wire preparing for this second game, trying to get that first win of the season?
Yeah, just putting a bow on the Chiefs' loss, kind of doing some wrap-ups there, and then moving ahead to Las Vegas, what, you know, John Harbaugh, the players, are saying about last week, this week, and also how the Ravens can win. And I think, again, establishing the run is going to be a big part of that.
Kevin, enjoy the rest of your Turn It Up Tuesday. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Kevin.
You too, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks.
There's Kevin Ostreicher, everybody. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. We'll come back, whip around, have it in the world of sports last night and historically for the Orioles and the Ravens on this September the 10th. Stay tuned for that. Then we're talking Orioles baseball. Ryan Ripken, our colleague on Baltimore Baseball Tonight, brought to you by Salvo Auto Parts. Ravens, or the Orioles, they got hammered. I mean, the Orioles, Red Sox were like the Ravens, putting up runs on the Orioles pitching. Orioles got to get it together offensively. If they want to win the division, they're going to make the playoffs. But the way they're going right now, 5 games under 500 for almost 3 months, they're not going to last long.
Brought to you by Box Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes, the best crab cakes in Harford County.
105.7 The Fan.
All right, whip around here on this Turn It Up Tuesday, cranking it up to 12. You pick a song, we'll play it. Send a request, 410-583-1057. College football coming up Saturday in Charlottesville. Renewal of an old ACC rivalry that went on for years. University of Maryland is at Virginia. 8 o'clock kickoff. You can hear the game. 105.7 The Fan. Virginia's 2-0. Maryland's 1-1. Coming off that very disappointing loss at home to Michigan State. Terps are 2.5-point favorites. We'll talk to Damon Evans tomorrow, athletic director of the University of Maryland. But 3 games in, you got Villanova looming here, but already crisis mode, perhaps, for Mike Loxley's team. If you want to get into a higher level of bowl, you want to start competing for postseason accolades. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Michigan State loss could be a poor turning point in this season. Not to get into hyperbole or start beating the death drum here, but if they lose to Virginia, things could really go pear-shaped for them moving forward.
It sounds like, Bob, that their secondary is a major issue.
Yeah, because they're all playing in the NFL right now.
Yeah, and I mean, Childs?
Trader had a good game yesterday.
Childs was, he was a dude that FIU, he couldn't do anything right at home. Then he goes on the road, and he looks like Lamar Jackson.
He threw 3 picks, let's not forget that, too.
Right.
But he made plays when they needed to make plays. 77-yard bomb, and then was perfect, basically, in the drive that set up the field goal. But, you know, we were the flagship home of Maryland. I'm wearing a Maryland shirt today. I mean, I've been a fan since Randy White was playing for him, for bleep's sake. But I don't know, man. I'm a little frustrated, English voice, with what happened Saturday, and I don't think it bodes well for the rest of the season. Maybe I'm panicking. Maybe the Orioles suckage is starting to leak into my Terp fandom here.
Well, this I think Saturday's game is a turning point game.
That's
season
what I'm asking
turning
you.
Point.
Yeah, if they lose here,
they're in deep trouble.
Virginia 2-0 coming off a win at Wake Forest. We'll get into all that. Hey, you boxing fans, big old fight coming up Saturday night. Canelo Alvarez defending the undisputed super middleweight championship against the undefeated Edgar Belanga, who started his career with 16 knockouts in the first round. But he's stepped up in, competition level in a big way. A lot of people saying Canelo's kind of cherry-picking his opponents as he's getting a little older. Still in his early 30s, but older in fight years. So we shall see. It's a really good card, too. So check out your local providers to see where you can watch that thing for sure. This day in Orioles history. Let's start. It's, September 10th on the whip around? 1983. Orioles in the Bronx, taking on the Yankees. They won not one, but 2 games. How about a little 2-game sweep? Game 1, 8-4. John Lowenstein hit a grand slam off Goose Gossage in the 9th inning as the Orioles win 8-4. Sammy Stewart gets the win in the nightcap. Gary Renicki, sweet swinging Kenny Singleton, drove in runs. Mike Boddicker, he gets the win 7-strong. Tippy the save, 2-1. Orioles on their way to the World Championship. 10 years ago today, Fenway Park, where the Orioles got their pants pulled down last night. Caleb Joseph hit a 2-run homer. Adam Jones, Ryan Flaherty had 2 ribbies each. Wei-Yin Chen picked up his 15th win. Orioles beat the Boston team 10-6. Ravens history. How about 2000? First Super Bowl year on this day. Nolan, are you old enough to remember this one?
Super Bowl?
2000 Ravens?
I was at my grandparents' house. I don't know if not I was doing Super... much.
So you would have been what, four?
Yeah, I don't know if I was doing much attentive
Well,
watching.
Maybe the one of the signature wins of the early Ravens era was on this day 24 years ago at M&T Bank Stadium. Or I guess it was called PSINet at the time. I can't remember. Tony Banks. Remember him, Vinny?
Oh, yeah. Michigan State.
Threw five touchdown passes, including a game-winner to Shannon Sharp with 41 seconds left as the Ravens beat Mark Brunell, Jimmy Smith, and the Jacksonville Jaguars 39-36 because Jacksonville had owned the Ravens early in their Baltimore tenure. So that was a big bust-out win for the Ravens. Tony Banks would eventually get benched in favor of Trent Dilfer. But that was 24 years ago. What? What? 2012. This is 12 years ago. At M&T Bank Stadium, Joe Flacco threw two touchdown passes. One to Anquan Boldin, one to Dennis Pitta. Ray Rice rushed for two touchdowns. And rookie kicker, let that sink in, rookie kicker Justin Tucker kicked three field goals.
Wow.
As the Ravens blew out the Cincinnati Bengals 44-13 on their way to a Super Bowl championship. And then a year ago today, season opener, downtown Baltimore. J.K. Dobbins scored a touchdown early, then blew his Achilles. He was done for the year, but Justice Hill took over, and he said, hey, I got this.
On second and goal, Hill spins his way in. Touchdown. Second touchdown of the day for Hill, and only the fourth of his career.
CBS on the call as the Ravens season opener beat the Houston Texans 25-9. Justice Hill, two touchdowns, as we said. J.K. Dobbins scored one as well, which would be his last touchdown as a member of the Baltimore Ravens. And if memory serves, he got hurt in the red zone by running in for a score. Now coming off a big day for the Chargers. But a year ago today, Ravens beat the Texans, and they would meet again just a few months later in the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. We'll come back, talk about the struggling Orioles, the original birds, as they're in Boston. They lose last night 12-3. Runners in scoring position's not good, but the pitchers were terrible for the most part last night. Ryan Ripken, he's going to try to walk us down. Walk us off the ledge, man. It's all cool. We're going to be ready to rock and roll over the next 3 weeks. I'm a little pessimistic, but then again, cooler heads usually prevail. And speaking of cool heads, how about Nolan McGraw's Funhouse? Don't get any cooler than that. With about 17 games left in the season, our colleague on BBT, he's Ryan Ripken. Ryan, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Happy Turn It Up Tuesday, as always, fellas.
All right, well, I'm coming out. I want to lambaste, napalm, whatever you want to call it, the Orioles and their inability to string together quality at-bats, string together innings of crooked numbers, games, shall I say, Ryan, with crooked numbers. Yankees scored, what, 10 last night? I don't think the Orioles have scored 10 in their last five games combined. Whatever it is, I know that Hyde shook up the lineup, put old set up there in the two hole. Outside of Gunner and Taters, offense has been rather tepid. I know it's all, we don't have enough time to talk about the offensive woes. If you could put your finger on one thing, however, what would it be? Or is it much more multifaceted than that?
Yeah, I felt like I could have let you go on a monologue there for the rest of the segment, right?
Johnny Carson.
Oh, hey now. But look, I think if I would sum it up, for me with them, it was a word we used constantly on the previous Baltimore Baseball Tonights. It's just consistently inconsistent, you know. And for the Orioles' success, when you've looked at it, when they are feeling good, we know what they're capable of doing. They can rival any lineup. And actually, I know that people hate saying the Texas Rangers comp from last year, but I would compare that kind of lineup to Texas in the meaning Texas, when they got scorching hot at any point during the season, they could hit the ball out of the ballpark better than anybody. They could drive runners in with anybody. But then they had a stretch where they had some guys hurt. They didn't score as much as they used to. And then they weren't being as productive. Then they picked it up. So the Orioles, there's hope there. But the other part of it is if you are not driving the baseball for extra base hits and doing all that, you're going to have to manufacture other ways, meaning you're trying to work the counts and at-bats. You got two strikes on, trying to get, you know, maybe this is still the old philosopher in me. I always try to find a way. Striking out to me was never really an option. You know, did I still strike out? Absolutely. But I think at times we kind of, I think for the Orioles they got to work a little bit backwards in some cases, because those gritty at bats are is what you're going to need when your team's not going well. Hence why you're having more inconsistencies. It's because they have some pretty good hits or some long balls, and then the next day it feels like if they're cold, all of them stay cold. So that would be the biggest thing, is that they're consistently inconsistent. But can they get hot, Bob? Yes, they can.
Now, we've seen that, and again, the Orioles have had a well over 500 record for well over 2 years now since Adley Rutschman came up. And you know a lot of these guys. Of course, you're a former professional baseball player yourself. But at this, with the frustration mounting, did players start to like maybe point fingers a little bit? Not just this team, because they've been close-knit clubhouse for many years, but is it kind of human nature? Like, you know, Joe Blow over there gets a hit every now and again with a guy on third less than 2 outs. We might not be sucking right now. Does that start to creep in a little bit at this stage?
And not at this level, you know, especially with, I think more when you get with guys or when guys are struggling, you understand it when they are. Like, you can sit there in the dugout and be like, man, I hope he gets a knock here. Because you know that it's been rough, and if he strikes out or gets out, you're just sitting there, and you're just hoping that, that a player that you know what he's capable of is able to get back on track. And that's something I've seen all the time, but it's not pointing fingers, because, quite frankly, all of the Orioles on this team have had their hands in helping this team win and maybe not doing what they need that results in a loss, right? So there's no finger pointing. It's more so about the urge and the hope that some of those guys can get going. Like, I guarantee you with Adley, and you're watching, a lot of the guys are probably sitting there. Some of them are going like, man, you know, they might not say it out loud, but they go, man, he's it's been a tough stretch for him. But do they have all the confidence in the world with him? Yes. But then you're trying to figure out how can they get him back going. And for the player, the hardest thing is to not try to press. And I think for Adley, I think you're seeing a pressing. You know that there's expectations on him. And then probably, like everything, like you just saw with the football game last night with the 49ers and McCaffrey, I wouldn't be surprised if Adley was dealing with certain things that people just don't know about. You know, there's some other things injury-wise, you know, that that might be also would be able to explain why he's having more struggles than what meets the eye.
Ryan Ripken joining us, Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan, joins us every Tuesday on the program. And, of course, he's our colleague on Baltimore Baseball Tonight, brought to you by Salvo Auto Parts. Does the angst with the offense get amplified a little more, Ryan, knowing that, you know, sometimes the pitching doesn't exactly keep you in games? Cade Povich had a rough night, so did the bullpen. I mean, nobody really threw the ball well at Fenway Park. Does that become part of the equation? It's like, oh, we're down 1-0. We're screwed here all of a sudden.
I wouldn't say it's screwed. It's just more so last year's Orioles would go, hey, we're down 3-0 in the first or second. All right, we'll get it back, and we're going to win this game. You know, there was no I'm not going to say the players doubt, because you don't want to, but last year, truly, I had Dean Kramer on yesterday on my show, the Ryan Ripken Show, and I was just telling Dean, I said, look, last year was almost like fairy tale-ish. Everything went your guy's way, or you fell behind, you found a way to get back into the game each and every time. You know, there was no real hiccup. For this Orioles team this year, though, they fall behind. It's been really hard for them to get back in the game. So they're not having that same success, snap your fingers, and the offense is putting up 5 or 6 runs, and the Orioles coming from behind, which they were, I think, the best in baseball last year, come from behind wins. So I think that that's where I look at it, is it's not that they're necessarily pressing more, but maybe it's an understanding that they're not going to have that instant success when they fall behind, and maybe then in the back of their mind they feel like they got to press a little bit, if that makes sense.
Hey, Ryan, does the manager, you know, during these times when, you know, you're struggling and the whole team's struggling and you're losing games and, you know, you're just inconsistent, like you said, does he get on guys? Does he yell at guys? Or does he just got to stay calm throughout and try to keep positive? What, you know, football is different than baseball. So how does the baseball manager handle these kind of times?
Yeah, you know what? I think it's understanding who you're dealing with, you know, and every player reacts differently. In some cases, you want to say, hey, that tough love, you know, and you move on from that, right? Like, that's what some guys need. They need a little kick in the butt. You're like, hey, what you're doing ain't good enough. And, you know, and sometimes that can go. Other cases, it's trying to figure out how you get the most out of that player, whether it's asking questions, trying to be more, not even being that you're trying to give a big hug to the guy, but just be like, hey, talk to me. What's up? How can I help you? You know, so I think for a baseball manager, and the reason why the mind is so fragile, right? And at least for football, you can go out and hit somebody or try to execute that way. With baseball, hitters are dictated by how they're able to see the ball and where they are in a mental state. If they're in a terrible mental state, they got zero chance in the batter's box. So I think for Hyder, you pick and choose your moments. You figure out who's better at reacting the different ways. And I'm sure he's done multiple things. And guys that I've talked to, they got a lot of respect for Hyder there. And they know he's trying to do right and give them a chance to win.
Ryan, real quick, confidence level on Albert Suarez tonight is what?
I think he bounces back. You know what? We're going to wipe it clean. I'm saying confidence is high. You know, and if it's not, I'll probably hear about it on social media later. But he seems a guy that doesn't get fazed when things go wrong. Things went wrong. How about a big Al bounce back?
Well, I'll tell you what state we're in right now. It's Maryland, as a matter of fact. He's Ryan Ripken. He's Baltimore Baseball Tonight, brought to you by Salvo Auto Parts. Ryan, enjoy the rest of your Turn It Up Tuesday, and I will see you shortly, I'm sure.
All right, guys. You enjoy the rest of your day. Talk soon.
Thanks, Ryan. Ryan Ripken, everybody. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. We'll come back, talk to Nolan McGraw, get to a fun house real quick. And then news from the Nest coming up. John Harbaugh met with the media yesterday talking about a lot of things relating to his team as they're getting ready for the Las Vegas Raiders. Home opener is coming up on Sunday, 1 o'clock kickoff, and we got big plans for you getting you ready for the game here on The Fan. Have lost four in a row, so keeping teams alive like Detroit, Seattle, Boston in particular. So we'll talk about what the Red Sox are trying to accomplish down the stretch, and most importantly, what their offseason might entail, because they've fallen behind the Yankees, yep, the Orioles, the Rays, the Blue Jays, who made the playoffs the previous 2 years. What's the big picture scenario for the Boston Red Sox? Then we're going to look at our picks, because there was a game last night, and we'll get into the standings as we head into the week two. Jason Cole's going to have some NFL lunch with us, longtime NFL writer, talk about week one. American League East report, Yankees win last night. They're now a game and a half up on the Birds. And then Vinny's Feeble Five. Who are the five worst teams in the National Football League? For instance, what fan base is burning their quarterback's jersey? Are they going to be part of the Feeble Five? But let's bring in Nolan McGraw. Nolan, what's up?
Doing pretty good. Like a lot of other people, yesterday was awaiting John Harbaugh's press conference in the afternoon to get some thoughts on the week one loss to the Chiefs. And John was in midseason form with the injury report.
Oh, yeah.
People asking
Wednesday.
What's with Lamar Jackson's absence? Because if you didn't hear, he wasn't on the field during the media portion of practice yesterday. However, yesterday was team photo day. He was there for that. So it's not like he was completely gone from the building, just didn't practice for that 30-minute portion that the media is there. And John, like Vinny said, just completely deflected. You'll know Wednesday.
And apparently Lamar was engaging on social media too. So if he was injured to the point it's a level of concern, I'm guessing, you know, we wouldn't be hearing from him.
I think it was just a rest day. And here's why. They played Thursday night. So they get back late Friday. So then you have the weekend off. All right. And Tuesdays is players' day off. And on Monday, they weren't doing any game plan type stuff. They weren't doing any probably prep for the Raiders. So it's like, Lamar, take another day off. So then you have 5 days off, because he did take kind of a beating. You know, I mean, he got hit a lot. So having another day off, you know, not running around, to me, it's not dumb.
Yeah, this is a nothing to see here, please,
disperse. Nothing. Mm-hmm.
Unless he's not there yesterday. Then we're like, where the hell is he?
Right. Well, I mean, that's the way it goes with not just Lamar, any quarterback or star player. You know, they're not out there. People start, you know, getting worked up in their head and they start freaking out. But, you know, pretty easy to see the way he was moving in that game that there was nothing wrong. I think you'd notice if he was coming up limping or anything.
Yeah. And I was shocked that Josh Allen practiced yesterday. Yeah. I thought they would give him the day off, but I think they wanted to show everybody, you know, they play Thursday night.
Correct.
That's the thing.
And it's his non-throwing hand, too. So he landed on it, scoring a touchdown, as he was responsible for four of those for the Buffalo Bills. We have time for a funhouse trip? Or
I'll tell you what we do have time for.
What's that?
The giveaways have returned for Vinny and Haney. I've got a pair of tickets here to see Skillet and Seether. They're going to be at Pier 6 Pavilion on September 19th, so it's coming up here soon. Tickets on sale courtesy of Live Nation, but we're giving away a pair right now. I'm looking for caller number 6, 410-583-1057. Again, two tickets to see Skillet and Seether coming up later this month.
I'm going to raise my hand. I've heard of Seether. Are these two individual bands, or is it like Seals and Crofts? Or
it's not Crosby, Stills, Nash, or Young. Yeah, they're separate.
Okay, so Skillet, never heard of them. I've heard of Seether, but we're going back to like the 90s here. But we want you to rock and roll like it's 1996 here on 105.7 The Fan. So do what Nolan told you to do, and you can jam on us here on The Fan. We'll come back. John Harbaugh news from the Nest. Let's count that dough. 12:15. Christopher Smith will be joining us, Mass Live, talking about the Red Sox and how they're... Rob Refsnyder, why you got to do this to the Orioles, man? I mean, really? What are you, Ted Williams all of a sudden here on a late September Monday night? And then we're going to look at our picks as I'm pretty sure you took the Jets.
I took the Jets. Oh. You guys, yeah, so I lost.
We gained a game, Nolan. We're the Red Sox all of a sudden.